100 years ago this summer, Buffalo, New York threw itself a coming out party, the Pan American Exposition of 1901. To strains of trumpets and trombones, the city and the nation rode the Industrial Revolution into the 20th century. For Buffalo, the Pan Am staked the city's claim as a center of American industry, transportation, and culture. And for the nation, the exposition heralded the coming of age of the United States in a world long dominated by Europe. Vice President Theodore Roosevelt, hero of the Spanish-American War, traveled to Buffalo in May of 1901 for the formal opening ceremonies of the Pan American Exposition. Actor James W. Foote has studied Roosevelt's oratory. He reads from the opening lines of the Vice President's address.
Today, we formally open this great exposition by the shores of the mighty inland seas of the North. For all the peoples of the Western Hemisphere have joined to show what they have done in art, science, and industrial invention. What they have been able to accomplish with their manifold resources and their infinitely varied individual and national qualities.
Spread out on the north side of Buffalo, the Pan Am celebrated electricity. The Sholkoff Hydroelectric Plant had opened in 1896, 20 miles to the north, just below Niagara Falls, lighting up Buffalo and every night, illuminating the Pan American Exposition grounds, as well as its centerpiece, the Tower of Light. Melissa Brown is an archivist and historian at the Buffalo and Erie County Historical Society.
The lighting would start from the south end and then culminate in the electric tower. The photographs show these benches all over the Court of Fountains. And actually, the novelty was just to sit down in those benches and watch the nighttime illumination. That was entertainment, to actually sit and witness this gradual raising of the lights over a 350-acre area of ground.
Ornate but temporary buildings line the promenades, punctuated with gardens and fountains. Only the New York State Building was made to last. It would become the permanent home of the Buffalo and Erie County Historical Society.
Every new arrival had to find a place to live. And most lived in neighborhoods near people who spoke the same language.
At the time, Buffalo was the eighth largest city in the United States.
Historical Society Executive Director William Senior shows visitors an exhibition celebrating the centennial of the Pan Am.
There were 125 passenger trains that arrived and departed Buffalo each day. Frederick Law Olmsted had already laid out the park and parkway system for the city. Ellicott Square building downtown, built in 1893, was at the time of its completion the largest office building in the world. The Pan American Exposition was a way of telling the rest of the country what Buffalo was all about.
But the city's confidence was shaken, and the legacy of the Pan Am was sealed in September of 1901, when President William McKinley came to see the electrified splendor of the fair. At a reception in the Temple of Music, he greeted the people of Buffalo. Decades later, a woman identified only as Mrs. Weir recalled the visit on a recording made while she lived at Buffalo's Presbyterian home.
And that day, we went into the music hall, you know, the music. We were in there and heard that great organ, you know, it was supposed to be such a great organ. We hadn't got very far away from there when we heard this big shouting and hollering and going on that the president was shot,
25-year-old Leon Czolgosz fired two shots. One bullet did little harm. The other lodged in the president's abdomen, and McKinley died 8 days later.
I think it was, to use the current vernacular, a major downer.
William Greiner is president of the university at Buffalo.
The lights were put out a bit by the attack on the president. I used to kid about it in some ways. I say that we have been cursed for a century because of William McKinley, and now that the anniversary is passed, where the curse is lifted and we'll be in fine shape.
There was little evidence of any curse on Buffalo through the first half of the 20th century. Steel plants, grain elevators, automobile and plane factories lined the shore of Lake Erie. Local entrepreneurs commissioned Frank Lloyd Wright to design trophy homes. But the foundries and factories aged, and with the opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway in 1959, the giant Great Lakes ships could bypass Buffalo. Today, the greatest promise for bright lights is the prospect for a downtown casino.
This was the entrance in 1901 to the Pan American Exposition. This was the ceremonial entrance.
Mark Goldman is a local historian and restaurateur. He's our guide to the City of Light.
This was the way that, you know, when President McKinley came and dignitaries and you wanted to show off the fair and show off your city, this is how you came. You came down this boulevard, parkway really, which was part of Frederick Law Olmsted's park system. And this led right into the lake, which was part of the Pan American Exposition. And we would be standing right under, I believe, what would have been the gateway to that.
So you want to show us around the Buffalo of today, 100 years later?
Let's go.
Mark Goldman grew up in New York City and moved to Buffalo in 1967 to attend graduate school in urban history. His book, High Hopes, chronicles the rise and decline of Buffalo. To introduce us to his adopted city, Mark took us out of the country.
Let's make a left. I want you to go to see the water.
I want to see the water. Mark, you brought us to Canada. Over the Peace Bridge, we're standing on the grounds of Fort Erie and looking at the skyline of your city. What do you think from here?
Well, to me, I don't really see a skyline so much as I see somehow more of a vista, and I see a society more than a skyline. I see different uses. I see something that's industrial. I see an office place, and I see a transition from a downtown into a residential. I think the skyline per se is not that impressive. But what I think is impressive is that you can't see the whole lay of the history of that community really in front of you. And that's what I see when I look out.
Well, if you say we're seeing the history of the community, let's start way down on the right where, you know, sort of hills in the distance, but what looks to be a steel plant.
Well, of course, it was at the riverfront and the waterfront that the history of this community started. That's where the first Native Americans settled, the Senecas, and all the other people that followed settled here, too. And what you see over there with that smokestack is a relatively late development. That was Lackawanna Steel, or it became Bethlehem Steel, at the turn of the last century. And then you move over that bridge, which is the Skyway Bridge or the Father Baker Bridge, and that takes you right into the heart of the downtown, where you see mixed with relatively recent skyscrapers. You see 1920s buildings. You see
right across from City Hall, we can see there.
Right, we're standing really directly across from that fabulous Art Deco City Hall. As you move along, you begin to see the small buildings, residential buildings, and now then you start seeing the church spires and the rest of what becomes more of a mixed residential community.
Driving over the Peace Bridge back to Buffalo, the storefronts and clapboard houses of old Irish and Polish, German and African-American neighborhoods take shape, separated by the streets and avenues of the city.
Now we're crossing Main Street, which is the historical racial divide in Buffalo. Everything east of Main Street is called the East Side. Everything west of Main Street is not the East Side. Sometimes it's the West Side. But really until the mid-60s, there were very, very few blacks living on the west side of Main Street.
About 20 years ago, Main Street was turned into a pedestrian mall with a trolley line running up and down its center. The HSBC Bank is at one end, the courthouse complex is at the other, and in between there's a hotel, some beauty supply stores, a few Chinese takeout restaurants, and several abandoned buildings, including the L.L. Berger department store, which was built in 1928. I can count on two hands the number of people on the street on a late morning of a regular business day, and for the most part, Buffalo's Main Street is a very quiet place. For singer Ani DeFranco, Main Street inspired a song about the fears that divide people in her native city.
White people are so scared of black people. They bulldoze out to the country and put up houses on little loopy-loop streets while America gets its heart cut right out of its chest. The Berlin Wall still runs down Main Street, separating east side from west.
It's a song called Subdivision about Buffalo and all of the, you know, sort of white flight that's occurred out into the suburbs and how that's decimated the inner city and the economy of it. You have money in the suburbs that doesn't filter back into the city, and it hurts me when I see buildings being torn down because they're abandoned, and how, you know, the sort of, you know, racism or economic factors in a declined post-industrial, northeastern, bordering on Midwestern, crumbling American city, how that affects all of us.
In the city of the neighbors, that history forgot.
Native daughter, Ani DeFranco, fiercely independent owner of Righteous Babe Records, speaks softly and affectionately about her Buffalo one afternoon before a hometown concert at Kleinen's Music Hall.
I'm a pretty no-nonsense gal, you know, and Buffalo is a very no-nonsense city, you know. I mean, it's there's no pomp or circumstance to it, you know. It's a city of good neighbors and down-to-earth people, and I think that, you know, if I had grown up in L.A., maybe there would be more flash or theatrics to my performance, but I grew up as a folk singer in the bars of Buffalo, New York, and I pretty much am on stage who I am off stage, and that's just kind of the way we are around here, I guess.
You left to go to New York City to make your way as
a
songwriter. Why did you come back?
Well, paying New York rents for an apartment that you visit occasionally just started to get kind of dumb. So, you know, Buffalo is a city of beautiful houses, huge, opulent, gorgeous turn-of-the-century houses with beautiful woodwork and nice little yards and dirt cheap. It's one of the cheapest housing markets in the country. So I thought, you know, for the price of a hobble, I could have myself a garden. Mm. So I came home.
What were business reasons for doing it? I mean, you've got yourself a record company, Righteous Babe, right now. Did you start that when you were in New York City and then move it up here? Did you start that here?
No, started it here.
Homegrown?
Yeah, before
business?
I moved when I was 18, yeah. And Righteous Babe Records has always been in Buffalo. And, you know, there was a time when I was living in New York when we contemplated, should we move the record company? Should we really build it there? And we made that conscious decision that Buffalo needs us, you know. That the whole, you know, and New York just doesn't. They certainly don't. So, you know, we thought we could use local businesses and try and grow together as a community. And, you know, that whole sort of think globally, act locally, really trying to make that a reality in our lives.
Are the hometown concerts, do they feel different?
I suppose so, yeah. You know, I probably have a pretty dumb grin on my face the whole time looking at all of my old friends and even family.
Singer Ani DeFranco sharing an evening with her fellow Buffalonians.